The Royal Gelatin Hour, directed by Rudy Valley. Tonight's headliners, Willie Howard, Morris Evans.
Valley and Company. For laughs tonight, Willie Howard, continuing his hilarious course in low comedy French. Tommy Riggs and Betty Lou Barry, the good little bad girl, and her accomplished accomplice. The Straub twins, sophisticated funsters from Mr. Rockefeller's Rainbow Room. For romantic drama, Morris Evans, who has just reopened his sensationally successful run in Richard II. Mr. Evans will play Paolo to the Francesca of Miss Edith Barrett in a radio version of the great classic love story, Paolo and Francesca. For your information and enlightenment, an interview with the only woman national executive of a near transport line, Miss Helen Stansbury. And for your sense of melody, harmony, and rhythm, the inevitable Connecticut Yankee.
Just returned from a tour of 15 key cities in 14 days, reports that people are beginning to talk about Tommy Riggs and his little Betty Lou in a big way all over. Here's what they're talking about. Enter Tommy with Betty in his vest pocket.
Signals, 42, 51, 98, 25. It's a parade. Voila, just from behind everything.
Well, say, Betty, what in the world are you doing?
Oh, I was just getting like at a football game. You know, rah, 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 just from behind everything, don't you?
Don't I what?
Don't you like to go to football games?
Why, certainly. Believe me, there's nothing like a football game in the world to build a fellow up. See, it gives you muscles of steel, the heart of a lion, the strength of a tiger, and the crushing power of a steam engine.
I guess you just didn't ever like to play football, did you, Mr. Tommy?
Well, Betty Lou, I'll have you know that I spent many hours on the football field.
What were you doing?
Oh, I was playing football.
Well, I bet I can play football, Mr. Tommy. Signal, 51, 38, 42, rah-rah, just bumba.
Well, you certainly seem to know football, all right. How would you like to go to the football game with me this Saturday?
Oh, boy, I'd like to get a whole bunch, too.
But you'll have to be on time, Betty. The kickoff is at 2:30.
Oh, I'll be right on time, Mr. Tommy. Can my granddaddy go with us? Because he plays football, too.
Your granddaddy? Well, Betty, your granddaddy is over 80 years old.
Yes, I know, Mr. Tommy, but my granddaddy makes a lot of money when he plays football.
Your granddaddy makes a lot of money playing football. Who told you that?
My daddy. He says we're going to have a lot of money when granddaddy sticks off.
Tommy. Well, Betty, I can see that you don't know a lot about football. Maybe I'd better explain a few things. Now, football is played with a football, and a football is a thing that you hold and kick.
Like Uncle Petey, huh?
Like Uncle Petey?
Yes, because Aunt Sophie holds him and kicks him sometimes.
No, I think your Uncle Petey is more like a punching bag, knowing your Aunt Sophie as I do. Anyway, a football is made of hide.
Huh?
I said hide.
Why, who's coming?
Nobody's coming. Now, a football is made of pigskin. Now, what is pigskin?
Oh, I know. Pigskin grunt and pigskin squeal, huh?
No, Betty. Maybe I can explain it
this
way.
What's the matter, Tommy? Can I help you?
Yes, I believe you can, Rudy. I'm trying to explain to Betty what a football is.
Well, let me have a try at it. Now, look, Betty. A football is about this big, see?
Uh-huh. Well, what's inside?
Nothing. It's covered with pigskin.
What's covered with pigskin, Mr. Valley?
The inside is covered with pigskin.
Well, Mr. Valley, you just said that there was nothing inside.
There's air inside, Betty.
Oh. Inside of what?
Inside the pigskin.
Well, what holds the pigskin on?
On to what?
On to the air.
It's sewed on.
Oh, it is.
Yes, Betty.
Well, what's it sewed on to?
Tommy, I give up, Betty. Tommy, I'm passing it right back to you.
All right, Rudy. Now, just a minute, Betty. We'll start from the beginning. Did you ever see a watermelon?
Oh, yes, and I like watermelon a whole bunch, too.
Well, if you scooped out the inside of a watermelon, what would you have?
A whole bunch of seeds and a tummy ache, huh?
No, you'd have a hollow watermelon, wouldn't you? Now, a football is like a watermelon.
Full of water, huh?
Yeah, no. Full of air.
Gee whiz.
Gee whiz what?
Well, gee whiz, who ever heard of a watermelon full of air?
Tommy, I don't know why I started this. But for the last time, a watermelon is not full of air and a football is not full of water.
Oh.
Oh, what?
Oh, you mean that a football is an oval-shaped bag made of pigskin into which a rubber bladder is inserted and filled with air and then thrown or kicked by a group of men known as football players, huh?
Well, my goodness, Betty, if you knew all this, why did you let me go through with all that lengthy explanation?
Well, Mr. Tommy, you didn't ask me what a football was. You just started to tell me, and I knew it all the time.
Well, what do you say we just forget the whole thing?
Oh, I almost forgot something, too.
You did?
Yes, you know Mr. McNamee's other name?
Mr. McNamee's other name?
Yes, you know Football McNamee?
Football McNamee? Where do you ever get a name like that?
Well, he says nobody else gets kicked around on this program like he does.
I see. Well, Betty Lou, don't you know it's way past your bedtime? I think you'd better say goodnight to everybody.
Well, can I tell my story first?
Well, all right, if it's not too long.
Around all day in clouds, If I open the cage door, he won't even come out. It's making you think he came all the way. It's even got to that old burnt face. And my poor canary has circles under his eyes. He used to whistle the prisoner's song, but now he does snake it the whole day long. And my poor canary has circles under his eyes. His only tails are the yellow lark and just a tiny sparrow. But I'm afraid when he's in the park, he leaves us straight and narrow. I've raised his lily, the man is so straight. Yet I've a feeling I'm being rich. Cause my poor canary has circles under his two big brown eyes.
Years now, this program has been coming to your home. In that time, we've tried to give a great deal of worthwhile information concerning our products. But never, I think, have we had more real news than tonight. We have a new product, a new dessert, and a delicious one, too. Royal Butterscotch Pudding. Felix cooked some for me last night, and you can take my word for it. It is simply wonderful. Graham will tell you all about it.
Yes, we're proud to announce this brand new member of the famous royal family of desserts, Royal Butterscotch Pudding. Butterscotch has always been one of America's favorite flavors. And from now on, you can enjoy, right in your own home, the most delicious butterscotch pudding you've ever tasted. A pudding with a full, rich, mellow butterscotch flavor. You know how delicious royal chocolate pudding is, and royal vanilla pudding, too. And this new royal butterscotch pudding is just as much of a treat, and just as easy to prepare. It's completely cooked in 5 minutes, smooth and creamy, with never any raw lumps or starchy taste. That's because it's made with wholesome arrowroot. Also, arrowroot makes royal butterscotch pudding very easy to digest, so it's ideal for children. Your grocer now has this delicious new butterscotch pudding. It comes in an attractive scotch-clad package marked Royal, R-O-Y-A-L. Try some tomorrow.
Stars are in the blue. like this, perhaps I'll hear a little whisper in the dark from you.
Once signed up Morris Evans by wireless for this week's show, we started on a thorough search for a play worthy of the talents of a player regarded by a great many competent critics as the greatest actor of our day. We think we have found what we were looking for in Stephen Phillips' version of one of the world's most famous love stories, the tragic romance Paolo and Francesca. And in Edith Barrett, we have found a Francesca of sufficient stature to match the unusual abilities of Mr. Evans. Miss Barrett is currently rehearsing a new Broadway play, Wise Tomorrow. We ask your added attention that you may not miss a word of this story. The tale of two star-crossed lovers who, in the inferno of Dante, burn passionately forever for their sins. Morris Evans and Edith Barrett in Paolo and Francesca by Stephen Phillips. Sirs and ladies, listen now, we pray, to a tale of love many men have told through many years. It is written here how Giovanni, tyrant of Rimini, being at last old and ugly with scars and weary of battle, doth wed for peace and quality the maid Francesca, young and most exceeding fair, a daughter of his friend in war, and how Giovanni has a brother, well beloved, the youth Paolo, strong and good to look upon, devoted to Giovanni in brotherly bond. And how Paolo and Francesca do meet, and meeting, love, and loving are undone. Our scene, a garden at Rimini, near Florence, between dawn and sunrise. Through the garden, enter Francesca, attended.
I cannot sleep, Nita. I will read here. Is it dawn yet?
No, lady. Yet I see a dawning in the east.
How still it is.
This is the stillest time of night or day.
Know you why, Nita?
No, milady.
Day in a breathless passion kisses night, and neither speaks.
Shall I stay here?
Ah, no. Perhaps in the dawn silence I shall drowse. If not, I'll read this legend to myself.
Is it a pretty tale?
Pretty? Ah, no, Nita. But beautiful and passing sad.
I love sad tales. Though I am gay, I love sometimes to weep.
But is it of our time? It is an ancient tale of two long days.
Oh, 'tis a tale of love.
Of love, indeed. But, Nita, leave me to myself. I think I would have no one stirring near me now.
Lady, I go.
The light begins. But he is far away. Better than tossing in that vacant room is this cool air, the fragrant air, the dawn. Where is the page which I had reached? Ah, here. Now let me melt into an ancient world.
Francesca.
Paolo. I thought you now gone into battle dim, far, far away.
And seems it strange that I should come then?
Oh, no, it seems that it could not be otherwise.
I went indeed, but some few miles from hence turned and could go no further. All this night about the garden have I roamed and burned, and now at last, sleepless and without rest, I steal to you.
Sleepless and without rest.
It seemed that I must see your face again, then nevermore. That I must hear your voice, and then no more. That I must touch your hand once. No one stirs within the house. No one in all this world but you and I, Francesca. We two have to each other moved all night.
I move not to you, Paul.
A night guided you on, and onward beckoned me. Now fades the last star to the east. A mystic breathing comes, and all the leaves once quivered and were still.
It is the first, the faint stir at the dawn.
So still it is that we might almost hear the sigh of all the sleepers in the world.
And all the rivers running to the sea.
What is that book you read?
It is an ancient tale.
Is it some drowsy page that, reading low, I might persuade your eyes at last to sleep?
It is the history of two who fell in love long years ago, and wrongly fell.
How wrongly?
Because she already was a wife, and he who loved her was her own husband, dear, familiar friend.
Was it so long ago?
So long ago.
What were their famous and unlucky names?
Men called him Lancelot, her Guinevere. Here is the page where I had ceased to read.
Their history is blotted with new tears.
The tears are mine. I know not why I wept. But these two were so glad in their wrong love. It was their joy. It was their helpless joy.
Shall I read on to you where you have paused?
Here is the place. Read it low and sweet.
Now in that day, it chanced that Launcelot, thinking to find the king, found Guinevere alone. And when he saw her whom he loved, whom he had met too late, yet loved the more, such was the tumult at his heart that he could not speak. For her husband was his friend, his dear familiar friend, and they two held no secret from each other until now, but were like brothers born. My voice breaks off. Read you a little on.
And Guinevere, turning, beheld him suddenly whom she loved. Beheld him suddenly whom she loved in her thought. And even from that hour when first she saw him. For by day, by night, though lying by her husband's side, did she weary for Lancelot. And knew full well how ill that love. And yet that love, how deep. I cannot see. The page is dim. Read you.
Now they two were alone, yet could not speak, but heard the beating of each other's hearts. He knew himself a traitor, but to stay, yet could not stir. She, pale and yet more pale, grew till she could no more, but smiled on him. Then when he saw that wished smile, he came near to her, and still near, and trembled. Then her lips, all trembling, kissed.
Paolo.
Francesca. In that kiss our souls together flashed, and now they are one flame. This nothing can put out, nothing devise.
What glow is on thy face, what sudden light.
It seems that I am proof against all peril.
And yet I fear to see thy heir so glad.
Tonight. All points of swords to me are dull.
And still I dread the bravery of thy words. Kiss me again and leave me tonight.
What do you fear?
One watches quietly.
Who?
I know not. Perhaps the quiet face of God, the eternal listener, is near.
I'll struggle now no more. Have I not fought against thee as a foe most terrible? Parried the nimble thrust and forth of thee, and from thy mortal sweetness fled away, yet evermore return. Now all the bonds which held me I cast off. Honor, esteem, all ties, all friendships, peace, and life itself. You only in this universe I want.
Shall we too then take up our fate and smile?
Remember how when first we met, we stood stung with immortal recollection. Oh, face immured beside a fairy sea that leaned down at dead midnight to be kissed. Oh, beauty folded up in forests old. Thou wast the loveliest quest of Arthur's knights.
Thy armor glimmered in a bloom of green.
Did I not sing to thee in Babylon?
Or did we set a sail in Carthage Bay?
Were thine eyes strange?
Did I not know thy voice? All ghostly grew the sun, unreal the air when we kissed. Kiss me again. I smile at what may chance.
Again and yet again. And sheer and sheer. Let me with kisses burn this body away, that our two souls may dart together free. I fret at intervention of the flesh, and I would clasp you, you that but inhabit this lovely house.
Break open then the door and let my spirit out. Paolo, kill me. Then kill thyself. To vengeance leave these weeds and let our souls together soar away.
You are too beautiful for human blow. Why did you shiver and turn sudden cold?
I felt a wind pass over me.
I too, colder than any summer night could give.
A solitary wind. And it has passed.
Do you still fear?
Ah, Paolo, if we should die tonight, then whither would our souls repair? There is a region which priests tell of, such as we, are punished without end.
Were we together, what can punish us?
Nothing. I think not that I love you less. Only I fear.
What can we fear, we two? O God, thou seest us, thy creatures, bound together by that law which holds the stars in palpitating cosmic passion bright, by which the very sun enthralls the earth, and all the waves of the world faint to the moon. Even by such attraction, we two rush together through the everlasting years. Us, then, whose only pain can be to part. How wilt thou punish? For what ecstasy together to be blown about the globe? What rapture in perpetual fire to burn together? Where we are is endless fire. Their centuries shall in a moment pass, and all the cycles in 1 hour elapse. Still, still together, even when faints thy sun, and past our souls thy stars like ashes fall.
And say your name. Paolo. Paolo.
Francesca, come with me.
Taking their cues in Act the Second are the Stroud twins, comedians, Helen Stansbury, airline executive, and Willie Howard, French teacher. There's an air of excitement here in New York these fine days. Flags of blue and gold are waving everywhere. Hotels are all set for invasion from all sides. New York will resemble a madhouse for the next 5 days. The Legionnaires are coming.
Of a million men.
Million men.
Hear the beat of 1,000 drums and bends. A million fighting Yanks has high and mighty ranks. They're the legionnaires from every state in the Union.
March on.
To the Legion.
Yay.
To the nation.
Yay.
To the flag long.
Yay.
With the heads high.
Yay.
As they pass by.
Yay.
They're the bravest of the brave. With the left and right, and the carry on, they are singing a song as they march along. If it's one or fight, you can bet all right on a fighting legion there. Thank you.
some 50-odd stories above us, where the Central Radio City building pushes aside the clouds over Manhattan, white-tie customers in the swanky Rainbow Room are being amused these early autumn nights by a team of comedians with a new approach to the laughter industry. These newcomers to the high places are the Stroud twins, Clarence and Claude, identical duplicates in a pair of very smooth workers. You hear now their first network performance. America, meet the Stroud twins.
Thank you. Good evening, and thank you, Rudy, for such a nice introduction. I deeply appreciate it. Incidentally, I shall introduce my brother a little later. Ladies and gentlemen, first, I want you to know that I consider it a distinction to appear on this program, and one thing that makes being here very gratifying is the fact that you have such a genial personality as Graham McNamee. I mean that. He's been very kind to me. He recently invited me out as his guest. I really feel that I owe a debt of gratitude. He was very nice. He has an excellent sense of taste. We had some very charming little ladies with us, thanks to Graham. They were decidedly charming society girls, debutantes. However, I shouldn't complain. As I recall, the little lady with me was very lovely, ravishing, in fact. She had the most beautiful black hair and nails you've ever seen, but I didn't mean that offensively. I find that it pays to speak well of everyone. It's really a policy of mine, and I've been very fortunate as a result. I was in, pardon me, I was in Europe. That's all I wanted to know. I was in Europe, ladies and gentlemen, for a number of months. I had toured the continent, and I came back on the new boat, the Queen Mary. I had a nice trip. I made $60 in tips. I arrived in New York, and on my arrival here, I had an unusual request. I was requested to play a benefit performance for the inmates of the State Insane Asylum. Wouldn't have minded, but they held me 3 days for observation. One of the inmates was passing with a wheelbarrow turned upside down. I said, "Why don't you turn that thing over?" He said, "You think I'm nuts? They'll put bricks in it." I went from New York to Hollywood, ladies and gentlemen. I was very anxious to get to California. My reason primarily for going to Hollywood was the picture objective. I've been very interested, seriously interested in pictures. In fact, during the last 2 years, I've been writing scenarios and sequences and all that sort of thing, and I've been sending them in to the producers. Of course, more recently, I've just been destroying them myself. But to give you... Incidentally, apropos of Hollywood, I should at this time like to introduce a very personable young man. Yeah, I think he deserves a little recognition, and as much as he's here, he has been serving more recently in the capacity of my assistant. I want you, ladies and gentlemen, to meet my assistant and twin brother, Claude.
Hello.
Hello, is that all you have to say, just hello?
Well, I think that about covers it, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Why, don't you realize this is a very important moment in your life that you are appearing on the Rudy Valet program?
Oh, I know where I am, yes.
Well, it should mean something to you. You don't seem very enthused about it. You are pleased, aren't you?
Yes, I'm happy about the whole thing.
You're satisfied?
Yes, I'm quite pleased. Of course, I didn't particularly care about the way you introduced me.
You didn't like the way I introduced you?
No, I know I don't rate a great deal, but I thought you might have done better by me.
You mean you don't like being introduced as my assistant? Is that it?
Yes, that's it. Being introduced as your assistant, judging from what you do, doesn't make a great deal out of me. You know?
I'm sorry. I did it impulsively.
Well, I just wanted to thrash it out with you.
Well, I think we should have an understanding. I neglected to tell you before, ladies and gentlemen. I'll make amends if I can. I should have told you it was an oversight. He has quite a cultural background. It's worthy of note. He's a college man. He's an alumnus, in fact. He went right through with it. What college did you attend?
What?
I...
Sorry, I disturbed you.
I say, what college did you attend?
Wellesley.
You attended the
Wellesley.
Wellesley is a girls' college.
Yeah, I found that out.
Oh, you did. What subjects or studies did you pursue in college? What preoccupied you mentally?
Oh, you mean...
What was in your curriculum?
You mean, what did I study?
Well, I could have reduced it to that.
Yes. I wish you had. I studied languages there. I was a student of languages.
A student of languages. You speak one language, no doubt, better than you do the others. You couldn't speak them all equally as well. You must predominate in one.
Oh, I do. I think I speak French better than anything else.
French? Parlez-vous français?
Oui.
vous êtes un cochon?
Oui.
Vous êtes un très joli cochon?
Oui. Ask me anything.
You weren't interested in dramatics by chance in college. Dramatics.
I heard you. No, I wasn't too interested. I did very well, however. I majored in spite of that.
You majored
in dramatics.
Well,
yeah.
you must be acquainted with the ancient Greek dramatists such as Aeschylus and Sophocles.
Sophocles. Sophocles. Yes.
Shakespeare, Shakespeare. He's the fellow who wrote Macbeth and Hamlet and The Merchant of Venice.
I read his stuff as fast as it comes out.
It's obvious that you are of a literary turn of mind. I'm glad to know that you like poetry. No. We have that in common.
That's nice to know.
I suppose it is.
I really do like poetry a great deal. I like wit, too, when I hear it. My mind is more or less equally divided between wit and poetry. Yeah.
You're not impartial at all.
No,
sort of a half poet and a half wit. I just want.
No, I mean. Of course, there's one thing I do like to study more than anything else.
You have one study that you like. Well, what is that?
Bugs.
You mean entomology?
Bugs.
Sort
of a hobby with me.
Oh, it's sort of a hobby. Well, maybe you could enlighten me. I'm curious to know where all the fleas go in the wintertime.
Search me, eh?
Oh, that's all right, as long as I know. However, before we leave the subject of insects, who was the girl I saw you with in the lobby with the hummingbird face?
The girl with the what?
The hummingbird face.
Hummingbird? Oh, that's my fiancée. I've asked her to become my wife.
Oh. Forgive me. It's my mistake.
No, it's my mistake.
Of course, I was under the impression that you were engaged to the girl I saw you with last week.
No, that's more or less off. That sort of blew up. She left. She went to the West Indies.
To the
West Indies.
Jamaica?
No, it was her own idea.
No.
She was unhappy about things. Her brother was married to an adagio dancer, and nothing worked out for him, and she was a little worried about herself.
She was married to an adagio. One of the dancers that dash madly around, bound and leap through the air?
Yes.
Her brother married one of those?
They were married for over a year, and then he didn't even kiss her once.
Well, what's the matter? Didn't he love her?
He loved her, but he couldn't catch her.
Oh,
You see, her...
Excuse me, you're not still offended about the way I introduced you. I hope I've made amends.
Well,
You're fully recovered from your hurt. You're once again normally complacent.
Yes, I feel better. Then
I've straightened everything
out. You've adjusted everything.
Well, I suppose we might go.
It's all right with me.
Well, I think so.
Yes,
goodbye.
Delicious and unusual dessert that's come out in years. That's what millions of Americans are saying right now about the latest member of the royal family of desserts, Royal Butterscotch Pudding. It's creamy, delicious butterscotch pudding with a smooth, velvety texture and a rich, mellow flavor. Here's what one housewife says.
At our house, butterscotch has always been a favorite flavor, but I've hardly ever served it because
homemade butterscotch pudding is so much trouble. So when I heard about this new royal butterscotch pudding, I bought some right away. And it made the biggest hit with the family. Why, we all think it's every bit as good as royal chocolate pudding and royal vanilla pudding. So you can see this new royal butterscotch pudding is just marvelous.
Yes, royal butterscotch pudding is just as delicious as the other royal puddings. Just as economical, too, and as easy to prepare. You simply empty a package into a saucepan, add milk, and bring to a boil while stirring. In 5 minutes, it's completely cooked. Treat your family to delicious new royal butterscotch pudding soon. It comes in the Scotch plaid package, marked Royal, R-O-Y-A-L. Buy three packages from your grocer tomorrow.
Won't you come along with me to the Mississippi? We'll take the boat to the land of dreams, down the river down to New Orleans. The band's there to meet us, old friends to greet us. Where all the black and white folks meet, they call it Basin Street. Oh, Basin Street is the street where dark and light folks always meet. In New Orleans, land of dreams, you never know how much it means, but just the light is burning. Glad to be, yes, sirree, where welcome to, dear to me, where I can lose, so they can see through.
People to make a town like this, New York, and one of them is a certain very pretty young lady who is seldom in town at all. I refer to Miss Helen Stansbury, the only woman executive in the national air transport business, in charge of the Women's Traffic Division for United Airlines. We've caught Miss Stansbury in one of her rare moments on the ground, and we add her now to our candid camera gallery of people you ought to know. May I introduce America's flyingest female, Helen Stansbury. Miss Stansbury, just how much flying do you manage to get in, say, over a period of a month?
Oh, I should say I average around 10,000 miles every 30 days, Mr. Valley. I have flown as far as 2,000 miles to deliver one little 20-minute talk.
Yes, that's your job, as I understand it. You hop around here and there and talk to women's clubs about flying. Is that it?
Well, I've been talking to men's clubs, too. I talk them into traveling the only sensible way, by air.
I've noticed during our brief acquaintanceship, Miss Stansbury, that you like to talk. One might almost say that you like to talk a lot.
You think so?
Yes, I do.
Don't you like girls who talk a lot?
I refuse to answer an advice of counsel. Mr. Bushell were here, I might say yes or no. I will say this. You're good-looking enough to get away with it. How did you land this spectacular job of yours anyway?
Well, I talked my way into it, of course. I just walked into the office of the vice president of the line and told him he ought to hire me. Then I told him why. So he hired me. It was quite simple.
Are you a pilot yourself, Miss Stansbury?
Good heavens, no. I don't know an aileron from my elbow. I'd never seen a transport plane close up until I took this job.
Were you frightened on your first flight?
Yes, but I talked my way out of it.
What did you say to yourself?
Just what I've been saying to thousands of women ever since.
And what is that?
Ladies of the Wednesday Afternoon Literary and Charlotte Club, do you realize that more than 50 of our pilots Have each one of them flown over a million miles? Why, if everyone at the wheel of a car knew as much about driving a car as a transport pilot knows about flying a ship, it would be safer to be in a car than in a plane, which it isn't. Do you realize you can have scrambled eggs a mile high on the mainliner? Do you realize that Dick Garland's wife flew from Los Angeles to Seattle with us in lounging pajamas? And that Adela Rogers St. John flew across the continent in an evening gown? Do you realize that the berths on our sleepers are as big as a twin bed? Do you realize we flew a three-day-old baby across the continent from New York to San Francisco? Do you realize that we have vegetables, chess and checker games, binoculars, typewriters, and bedroom slippers on board? Why, do you realize...
Whoa, let's go back a bit. Do you realize, Miss Stansbury, that you have stated that planes are safer than cars? Is that a fact, actually? Can you prove it?
I can't, no. But just ask your insurance agent about it. It's absolutely a fact that one of the leading American insurance companies considers an individual flying in a scheduled transport plane an A-risk, whereas that same person making that same trip by automobile is a B-risk. In other words, competent authorities believe you're safer in the air in a transport plane than you are in your own car in Sunday traffic.
And besides, your own car isn't equipped with a pretty stewardess. I have a great curiosity about those stewardesses, Miss Stansbury.
Yes, most men have. What would you like to know? A few telephone numbers?
Well, I could use a few, but not right now. How many stewardesses do you employ?
About 175.
And what are the requirements a stewardess must fulfill?
Well, she can't be over 5 feet 5 inches tall, and she must be under 25 and unmarried. And she must be a graduate nurse of an accredited hospital. You see, we carry a lot of babies and old people on board to need special attention.
Beauty is not a requirement. They don't have to be honeys.
Indeed, they do. We require both beauty and brains, which you will agree, Mr. Valet, is unusual. Really, our greatest stewardess problem is to keep the girls from marrying the pilot.
Perhaps the company should add to your duties the job of talking them out of it.
Who, the stewardesses?
No, I think you would have better luck with the pilots. Goodbye now, and thanks for an enthusiastic 5 minutes.
Goodbye, Mr. Valley, and happy landing.
London last spring, the hit show of the season was a comedy called French Without Tears. They're bringing it to New York this fall, thus offering competition for Willie Howard, who has been dispensing painless French lessons off and on around here for quite a while. Once again, friend Willie as Professor Pierre Ginsburg, who speaks French like nobody's business. Professor Ginsburg.
Merci, Monsieur Valley, merci. And now, messieurs and madame de la Réunion. In behalf of France, I bid you bonsoir, bonsoir, good evening, and ho hi everybody, ho hi. In response to my last lecture on the radio, I have received many letters asking for more advice how to get along in Paris during the exposition. One letter is from a young man by the name of Quinn. Quinn, spelled C-O-H-E-N. He was arrested in Paris for petty larceny. He tried to steal the steamship Normandy. He say he cannot make himself understood by the police. So for the benefit of this young man, or anyone else contemplating a visit to Paris, my discourse this evening will be en casque de l'heure. On tient du lombard et l'arrière du pont de Dieu. English translation, how to get along with a French policeman. In France, a policeman is called gendarme. Gendarme, spelled C-O-P. Or as the French affectionately call him, un grand flat foot. Now, say that perhaps you have lost your way and wish to know where you are. So, you go to the gendarme and say, pardonnez-moi, pardonnez. Be sure you ask for pardon before you get arrested. You say, pardonnez-moi, à vous bénir, à vous. À vous bénir, à vous. English translation, where am I? He will answer, avec Schlemiel, avec. Which means, how should I know? I'm a stranger here myself. Perhaps you are lonely and wish to make conversation with a gendarme. So you're talking to him like this. Avez-vous un bichel? English translation, have you any good telephone number? Then the gendarme will ask you for your passport. You show him your passport, and if you look anything like your passport picture, right away you will be arrested on suspicion. Should this happen, mind you, should this happen, perhaps you would like to detract his attention. So, be sociable. Show him a few card tricks, or show him your operation. Show him anything. Then he will ask you your nationality. The French word for Russian is un Russ. The French word for Spaniard is un Spaniol. The French word for American is un soccer. If you do not have the passport when the gendarme demands it, that is terrible. Terrible. Because then you will have more trouble than Joe Louis had with Tommy Farr. Then the gendarme will probably place you under arrest and take you to the station house. Be friendly with the sergeant. Call him un grand vache. After you get through using the iodine and bandages, explain to him that you did not know that it meant big cow. He will say to you, désirez-vous un clap on the cup? English translation, here's where you get the works. Next, they will take you before the justice, just as tough as they come. You will say to the judge, "Zer desire un scheister." Meaning, is this an honest trial? Or do I have to have a lawyer? Then tell him that you're American citizen and he cannot put you in jail. He will say, on perdu le code de, on perdu le concert, on perdu le cahier pendant le. Which means, you're here, ain't you? Try and get out. The judge will find you guilty and sentence you. Now, there is only one thing left for you to do. Pull out your country's flag and wave it in the air. If you haven't got a flag, a $5 bill will be just as good. Immediately, the doors will open and you will find yourself free. Free of all your cash. And now, my dear friend, I hope I have made it clear to you how to get along with a French gendarme. Should you wish any further information, just send me a postal card with your name and address or tear off the top of your old lady's wrapper. And now, before singeing off, I wish to say I'm leaving for Paris next week. And any of my radio friends who contemplate visiting Paris, I would like to invite you to my home. I will give you my address and direction how to get there. First, you walk to the Champs de la Zee, and you pass the Café de la Paix. When you come to the Eiffel Tower, you walk one block south, two blocks north, and you climb up two flights of stairs, and it is just around the corner. Corner. It's on the Rue de Valais.
Delicious new treat, Royal Butterscotch Pudding. As you know, Royal Butterscotch Pudding is a new member of the famous Royal family of desserts. And even though it's just out, thousands of people are already saying that it's just as delicious as those other puddings that are already America's favorites, Royal Chocolate and Royal Vanilla Pudding. Like these other Royal puddings, this new Royal Butterscotch Pudding is easy to make. There's no measuring, mixing, or melting of ingredients. You simply empty a package into a saucepan, add milk, and stir until it comes to a boil. It cooks in only 5 minutes. The reason Royal Butterscotch Pudding cooks four times as fast is because it's made with arrowroot. That's why it's so easy to digest and so good for children. Also, it's just as economical as the famous Royal Chocolate and Vanilla Pudding. Tomorrow, take your grocer's advice. Try this creamy, delicious new Royal Butterscotch Pudding. And try the other butterscotch desserts you can make with it. There are recipes on every package. Be sure you insist on real Royal Butterscotch Pudding. Look for the Scotch plaid package and the name Royal, R-O-Y-A-L. Buy some tomorrow.
Next week,
next with a cast headed by Doc Rockwell. Tommy Riggs, naturally, will be with us again. This is Rudy Valling bidding you all good night.
Among the selection cards tonight were Goodbye to Your Miss in Virginia, Whispers in the Dark from Artist and Model, and An Old Feeling from Vogue of 1938. This is the National Broadcasting Company.